Hey, what's up, everyone? Thanks for checking out this episode of TAP. We are talking big boars and bear hunting with Chad Simon of Lethal Air. And hearing his story, it's pretty unique of how he got into air guns and just a really cool dude. So I'm excited for you guys to hear this episode. So reach out to Chad and Lethal Air on Instagram and just let them know you heard the episode. To everyone who's been supporting the podcast, thank you so much. It really means a lot to me. And the better the podcast does, the more and the better content I can create for you guys. So it's a win-win. When you support, I grow. When I grow, you get more stuff. So if you haven't left a review, please go ahead and take a minute to do that. It really helps us out. And then one last thing before we jump into the episode is the website is almost up. So there's going to be some merchandise for sale and then some other air gun products that you can get. These things are going to be on pre-order because, as you know, COVID has destroyed all things good in the world. And that includes shipping and handling. So trying to get as much stuff as I can here in the U.S., but even still, stuff is slowed down. But there will be pre-order stuff on the website, so I'm excited for you guys to check that out. So stay tuned for that. And of course, I'll let all you guys know when the Airgun Podcast website is up and ready to go, because you can get a hold of all of the episodes of the podcast there as you're browsing through the store looking for airgun gear. So thanks again. Check this one out. Chad, welcome to the Airgun Podcast. How are things going for you, my friend?
Been really good lately. I appreciate you inviting me to come onto the show.
Oh, of course, man. I've been really wanting to have you on here, actually, and talk about all the cool things that you are doing and kind of how you got into the airgun world and messing around with big boars.
Yeah, so probably about, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago, a buddy of mine, we always hunt together every year, and he's like, I'm buying this new 50 cal air gun and I'm going to go deer hunting with. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And, so this is like 2 or 3 months before deer season, and he buys this 50 cal Dragon Claw, and we go out, and Virginia just happened to be one of the first states to legalize air guns for big game hunting. And, went out that season. We hunt together a lot, and he killed 3 or 4 deer with it. And I just thought it was kind of a cool thing. So my son at the time was about 8 years old. And the next summer, when his birthday come around, I bought him a Samyang Sumatra, little 25 cal, little carbine version, lever action, 25. And I just thought it was a perfect gun to, you know, for kids, because it was like no recoil. You don't have to, you know, the kids don't get that trigger flinch from the loud bang and things like you do with a high-powered rim firearm. So I bought that, and through the summer we shot squirrels and some raccoons and whatever. And then the following deer season, I was like, well, I'm gonna buy an air gun and go hunting with you. And I mean, he was the only person I knew, and he went all in. He bought an old shoebox compressor and an old aluminum heavy, you know, scuba tank that's like waist high. And so I went out and got a Samyang 45 cal, and we started hunting together. And now he was the only other person I knew that, you know, was doing something like that. And I killed, I think, 2, maybe 3 deer that next year with the air gun. And then just maybe, I think the following hunting season, I was sitting in, I had shot some deer. It was some 200 grain flat nose out of the Samyang, and it was stock. And the bullets were always, you know, I found all 3 deer, but the bullet would get lodged on the opposite side of the hide. You know, it would never pass all the way through. And I was bored one time in a tree stand and just searching through the internet, trying to figure out how to make that gun a little more powerful. And I ran across the Jeremy King and African Air Ordnance, and I shot him an email, and he's like, well, we get the double tube guns over here, but we don't get the single tube. Mine was a single tube. And he's like, if you want to take your gun apart and measure the valve, and if it matches the double tube guns, and this is when these guns really first come out, so wasn't a whole lot of, you know, information out about them. And I told him it was a 2-week deer season here that I was able to use an air gun. So I told him after the 2-week season was over with, he sent me directions on how to tear it apart, and I tore it apart and measured the valve and some parts he told me to measure, and they were bigger than the double tube, so you get more power out of a single tube Samyang than you do a double tube. And so he's like, well, if you trust me to ship your parts over here to South Africa, I'll make new parts for the single tubes, and I'll give you a kit for free. And that was probably like a 4-month process, you know, waiting for him to produce these parts. And in the meantime, you know, I check in with him every now and again. And I just asked him one day. I was like, "Hey, you got anybody in America that sells your products?" And he's like, "Nah, I've always wanted to have somebody over here." And I was like, "Well, I'd be interested in doing it." So I just kind of got thrown in the mix from there. Learned how to do repairs and upgrades on the Samyangs, and then probably 2 or 3 years later, the Texans were out, and then he came out with some upgraded valves for them, and it's just snowballed from there. And it got to the point to where I quit my day job and started doing this pretty much full time.
Wow. That's amazing, dude. That's I wish that would happen to me.
Yeah.
That's cool. Well, before we dive too much further into that, what kind of background did you have before? I mean, did you grow up in Virginia your whole life? Did you grow up hunting? I assume somewhere like that, you might have done that.
Yeah, my grandfather, my dad, and everybody, they always hunted, uncles and stuff. So I always grew up hunting and fishing. My dad was born deaf. He's never been able to hear. So I never got to, like, turkey hunt when I was a kid because dad he couldn't hear the turkeys to, mm-hmm. Call them and things like that. So I was late to the turkey game. But as far as deer and bear and fishing and all that kind of stuff, I had done ever since I was a kid. And then I've gotten my dad into air guns now. He's older. And 2 years ago, Virginia passed a law to use the arrow guns, like the air bow and the air saber and those type of guns. And then they also passed that during archery season, if you have like a physical disability, you can get like a waiver and you can use it during the archery season, which a lot of the archery guys don't like. I get a lot of riffraff from those guys. They give the same deal to the crossbow hunters, but I look at it this way: if it's easier for your 5-year-old, 6-year-old out there with an air gun and enjoying the outdoors and doing some hunting with it instead of a 243 or 308, and then if you have a grandfather that can't handle the cold anymore, he's getting up in age, and archer season is still warm here in Virginia, pretty much. You get into rifle season and stuff, it starts getting cold, and it gets harder for the older folks to stay out there like that. So I think it's a good weapon to introduce to people like that, to get them back outdoors that maybe hasn't done it for a couple of years and, want to get back out there and still do stuff like that. And my dad, he had fallen off a ladder probably 10 years ago, and had to have a shoulder surgery. And just been having trouble pulling back a bow and a crossbow. So right. I was like, well, let's go get this permit. And dad had got a Dragon Claw 50 cal and had some arrows. And this past hunting season here in Virginia, dad shot a 250-pound black bear at the end of archery season with his Dragon Claw. So that was just, it was cool. It was, neat to see it going full circle from what I've started doing to seeing my dad at, almost 70 years old, take a black bear with one. And it's been a fun ride.
Yeah, man, that's super cool. What has been people's reaction like when you tell them what you do? If you like meet a stranger or you try and explain, this is what I do.
Right. Yeah, that actually happens quite often. Like a lot of my wardrobe now is airgun related T-shirts. Like I got a Shooter 1721 shirt, and I got Hot Sign shirts and Humorex and Air Force, mm-hmm. and then I have my own Lethal Air shirts and stuff like that. And hats and stuff. So I get approached so much that I'll either keep a 20 millimeter slug or like a 50 cal or 45 cal slug in my pocket just about everywhere I go. And I'll be like in food line or a Walmart, and some guy will be like, "Oh yeah, you into airsoft?" And I'm like, "No, I'm not into airsoft." That's the most common, is that they think I'm an airsoft guy. And then I pull out this 50 cal slug that weighs, 400-500 grains, and then they're just like, it just blows their mind. A lot of people just don't realize things like these exist these days. So that's kind of cool to just kind of introduce new people, and just be an advocate for our sport, basically, in a positive light.
Right. Yeah, for sure. So do you have a particular air gun that you're most fond of? I know I ask people this, like, what's your favorite air gun? And they always say, well, what am I doing with it? So I know there's a million different answers, but is there one that you just love to pick up?
I'm a big fan of the Air Force Texan. I'm also a big fan of the Hammer. I know that a lot of people, it's kind of like that unicorn, but I've had some experience with the Hammer throughout the years, and I own one now. It's just, the 2-round clip and being regulated and stuff and being compact. It's a good looking rifle. It really is.
Yeah.
And they've tweaked some new stuff to it, and mine shoots really well. So I'm just a big bore guy. I have more big bores than I do small bores. I got everything from a 20 gauge PBBA shotgun to the 20 millimeter extreme to a bush buck, you know. I probably own 4 or 5 Texans, a Hotson mm-hmm. power driver, an Evinex 50 cal FAC, raw 30 cal hammer. I got Air Saber and Air Bow. I have a Hotson harpoon. So I got a lot of them. Yeah, I got a couple. I got a custom extreme big bore 408 that has a 3-round custom magazine and a rear spring adjuster and some mm-hmm. custom stuff. It's like a one-off gun, a one-off build.
Right.
And I got an old Quackenbush. So I got a little bit of everything really in the big bore world.
That's awesome. So maybe you can speak to this a little bit. Why don't we see more regulated big bores, or on top of that, more big bores that have multi-shot capacity? Like, you know, the Umarex has a 2-round clip, we'll call it that. Why don't we see right. more things like that?
Well, two reasons. One, it takes so much air volume to move these heavy bullets. You know, the heavier you go, the more, you know, pressure it's going to take to push that bullet at an adequate speed to be, you know, worthwhile to hunt big game with. So that's one of the issues. And the other issue is that the bullets are so heavy that they probably, it'd just be kind of hard to cycle, like in a magazine, like you say, your FX mag or, you know, whatever. You go loading up 8 350 grain bullets in this big, huge round magazine, and you're going to have a heck of a spring system to shift that thing around.
Right.
And that kind of thing. So I foresee it coming. I think you'll see something like some type of like clip design where maybe they're stacked on top of each other.
Right.
But they'll have to figure out, cause there's so many different variations in bullets. You know, you got round nose and Spitzlers and hollow points, and you got short and stubby, and you got big and long. So it's going to have to be some type of universal clip design that could be able to stack them on top of each other. And also not damage the lead and ding up the ends and, you know, cause accuracy issues, loading them in and that kind of thing. So, but I foresee it in the future though. It'll definitely happen, I think, down the road.
I think so for sure. I mean, I feel like we're kind of just at the tip of the iceberg with big bores and their capacities now. I mean, we've seen some crazy energy jumps in, you know, just modding them and switching out the valves or whatever kind of magic wizardry that you guys do when you mess with these big bores and upgrade them to be powerhouses.
Yeah, it's a pretty expensive sport to get into, you know, especially if you're a beginner. And I think that we're starting to see some firearm companies take notice to the air gun world. I mean, you have Sig Sauer coming out with their new little PCP. You know, Winchester has licensed some stuff, you know, with the Gammo and the little Winchester 45s and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So I think, you know, air guns have grown vastly in the past couple of years. And once the firearm companies have that capital to where they can mass produce stuff at a much cheaper rate.
Right.
A lot of these air gun companies are nowhere near as big as, you know, like Ruger and Smith & Wesson and that kind of thing. Savage. So I think once the firearm companies start really getting involved, like Sig Sauer has with their line of Sig Sauer Air, I think you'll start seeing prices drastically reduce. And I think you'll see a technology jump way faster than what we ever have seen before.
Wow. Well, that wouldn't be a bad thing at all.
No, the only people that hate that are the guys that want to kind of keep it under the table, you know, like mm-hmm. hiding the fact that you can get, you know, LDCs and stuff, you know, without a tax stamp and that kind of thing. Those guys don't want to go on mainstream, but you know, I'm just out to have fun with it and big game hunt. It's probably been 4 years or more since I've taken a firearm into the woods hunting. I've been strictly air gun hunting. If I'm not out during archery season with my Matthews bow, I'm in the woods with some type of air-powered weapon to hunt with. It just seems more fun. I've shot mm-hmm. deer and, you know, animals with firearms and archery, and this is just a new avenue. And a lot of people aren't doing it. So that's the other kind of cool factor, you know, factor in it. It's kind of like a little niche thing that nobody else is doing. So yeah, and you have to be so much of a better hunter too, because you have to treat it like archery. You can't, mm-hmm. you're not shooting deer across an open cornfield at 400 or 500 yards. The deer doesn't even know you're on the other side of the field. You got to get close to them, just like an archery hunter in most cases. I mean, there's some guys out there shooting some animals at 100 and 150 yards. I had a customer in Texas recently send me a video. He shot a hog at 202 yards with a 357 Texan and dropped it in his tracks right there. And I was like, dang, man, that was awesome. So yeah, it's, that's some good shooting. Yeah, very, very good shooting. And it was nighttime with night vision and all that stuff. So,
wow.
Yeah. I love to see that stuff. It's awesome. Well,
yeah. Chad, what has been some of the reasons that you have been just taking air guns into your hunting situations instead of firearms?
It's more of an archery challenge, I think. Mm-hmm. Just getting close. I kind of like that up close and personal thing. Like I said earlier, it's easy to shoot. You got to be a good shot. It's not super easy, but shooting an animal 300-400 yards away that doesn't even know you're standing there, compared to an animal that's got to walk underneath your stand at 30-40 yards and not smell you, not hear you, not see you, and draw your weapon and stand up or do whatever you got to do, you know, scent control, all that kind of stuff. So it just makes you a better hunter, and air guns make you a better shooter. It's like archery. You got to know your mill of dots and your holdovers on your scope, just like you need to know where your pins are hitting on your bow when you're shooting 20, 30, 40 yards and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So it just makes you overall a better outdoorsman and hunter, I believe.
Yeah, I think that's a strong point. I don't think many would disagree with you unless they've never shot an air gun, then they might disagree. But yeah. So what is kind of your goal with lethal air? Like what's maybe you can give us some background, kind of what you do and some of the things that you hope to achieve with the things that you're doing with, you know, big bores and things like that.
Things I hope to do is do more of these organized hunts that I've been doing the past couple of years. They've been greatly received by the air gun community. I've had three events with a buddy of mine. He owns a small business as well called Air Guns of Virginia, about 2 hours south of me. And we got together. It's a high fence property over in West Virginia, which a lot of guys don't like high fence and things like that, but which is totally understandable. We do it mainly because the place is like 1,100 acres and it's got like five beautiful log cabins, and mm-hmm. all the guys can come there and hang out for like 4 days, and it's all air gun guys. And they trap hogs down south, like around Georgia and South Carolina, and they bring them up there and they release them. And, you know, a lot of guys say high fence is like just shooting them in a pen, which is sometimes can be the case. Some of the animals get used to human activity and they don't really run from you. But when you get up there and they release those hogs and they run wild like that after being trapped, I mean, as soon as they see you inside that high fence, they're gone. You really right. got to hunt them.
Yeah.
But it's more or less the atmosphere, like everybody coming together, hanging out, fellowship, eating and, you know, together and on our free time, everybody's just shooting guns all day long. So, mm-hmm. you know, this past event, we had over 30 some guys come, it was sold out. Rossi, you know, American Air Gunner came and did some filming, and we had Rick Ream, you know, Shooter 1721 and some other folks. So it's just, you know, a lot of those guys, they see these guys on TV or see them on social media. They never really get to meet them. Well, they come to something like that I host like this, you know, or like RMAC, you know, same, mm-hmm. same thing. You know, everybody gets to meet Ted Beer and Matt Dubber and all those guys that you watch YouTube videos on. And it's just cool to meet some of those people in person, you know, and get and know them on a first name basis, you know, shake their hand and kind of hang out. And, you know, 3 or 4 day events, you really get to hang out with these people and get down to earth with them, and it's a really fun experience, and everybody's an air gun guy, so you know, we'll have a couple guys that are maybe new to the sport. Mm-hmm. This event I had, so I do a Maine bear camp. This will be the second year. I've been going to Maine for 3 years now hunting bear. I killed the first bear in Maine with an air gun, legally tagged it 2 seasons ago. And so after that, the next season, I took a group of 8 guys up, and we did a 6-day hunt. And then in 2 weeks, I'll take another group. And it's either going to be 9 or 10. I'm waiting for one guy to confirm. But mm-hmm. It's a 6-day camp. Everybody's got air guns. And it's just, you know, it's just kind of like a fellowship thing, because we're all in the same hobby, you know?
Right, for sure.
And so it just makes it that much more fun. And everybody brings their own air guns and brings 3 or 4 extra air guns for the free time that we can shoot. And mm-hmm. some guy might have an RTI Priest, and some guy might have a custom gun over here, or, you know, whatever. And you get to handle and touch other guns that you've looked at in catalogs and on YouTube videos. So, and that's, it just makes the whole experience a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I've definitely got to shoot a handful of guns that I wouldn't otherwise have been able to, if I didn't kind of get into the community and get in with the people who are, you know,
right. There's further not into very it many than me. Air gun. Yeah. There's not very many air gun shops in the country. That's for sure. Where yeah, you can go touch and handle, you know, a gun.
Yeah. I think that would be if there were more, I think we'd see a lot more people getting into them, because until you shoot them, it's so hard to explain to someone how fun it is or how different it is from shooting a firearm. And
yes,
also them also believing what their capabilities are. So how do people react when you tell them that you shoot bears with air guns?
Some people smirk at me. Some guys are like, okay, this guy's full of it, you know. Like, I just recently, there was a Maine bear hunting group on Facebook, and I'm a part of that just because I've been up the Maine the past 2 years up there hunting bear. And so I just asked if there was any air gun guys up there, you know, and asked that. I wasn't sure about using a arrow gun. I was thinking about hunting with the Hatsan Harpoon arrow gun. Mm-hmm. This here in 2 weeks, and I just wanted to get clarification, so I just asked it, you know, just a general question in the Facebook group, and some of the guys were just like, you know, rude comments. You know, you get that with anything, you know, as far right. as social media. You're always going to have those ones that are like, well, what do you got to do that for, you know? Yeah. and give you some smart aleck comments and stuff, and then when you start posting pictures and videos of, like, you know, a bison being taken and bears that you've taken and a deer, and then, or some videos of you firing off a high powered air gun and showing some of the pictures of these big slugs that you're shooting. And then they start, you know, changing their tune a little bit, and they're like, oh crap, I just thought you were out there hunting with your BB gun, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of fun to, you know, make them woke about the situation of air guns, if we can use that term.
Oh yeah. That's a good one. I think I might,
you're right.
I might use that more often.
There yeah. you go.
So what has been one of your, like, favorite experiences so far using air guns? Like, is it taking out your son and shooting with that? Is it just doing experiments of, like, what kind of crazy mods you can do to certain guns, or, you know, like the bear camp?
Right. I think what I have most fun doing is the organized group hunting trips. I'm planning, as long as this COVID-19 stuff calms down, I was working with Jim Walton. He does the Farm Snipers Facebook and stuff like that, and a lot of testing. And he has some connections with some contracts in Puerto Rico. And we were planning a group iguana hunt down there for earlier this spring. And then the COVID-19 messed all that. Right before we were getting ready to announce, you know, people to buy hunting spots and to right. come and sign up, we canceled it luckily at the last minute, because I was pretty sure if I'd have been a couple more days later, I'd have lost my deposit. We were renting like a big, it was almost like an apartment complex, a big condo complex down mm-hmm. there. Like, it was like 16 or 18 little condo apartments, and we could sleep, like, you know, 2 or 3 bedrooms in each one. So we were going to have like a group of like up to like 30 people come for like wow. a five day. So we're going to fly in and hunt for 1 day of rest, flying in, getting everybody situated, then 3 days of hunting, and then 1 day of flying back out and relaxing. And on the last night of the hunt, we have a restaurant down there, a local restaurant, that's going to take some of the iguana meat we harvested and make everybody an iguana dinner, and with some side, you know, Puerto Rican side dishes and things mm-hmm. like that. So it'd be the whole experience, you know, of, and everybody, you know, going out and enjoying, because iguana hunting is more, you don't have to be like you don't have to be singled out and by yourself to iguana hunt. It's kind of like squirrel hunting. Three or four of you can walk through the woods and shoot iguanas, and you ain't got to be, you need to be quiet, but you don't have to be super quiet. You can kind of still pal around and have a good time. You know, it's a relaxing environment with a lot of shot opportunities. When we went down there with Hotson a couple of years ago, me and another fellow, we just ourselves, we shot 256 in 2 days.
Holy cow.
And they're just overrun with them. There's like 1 million. I think there's about 1 million people estimated on the island. And there's like 4 million iguanas. The last I had heard some numbers, and that was a couple of years ago. And so, and they have no natural predators. So just out of control. And they destroy all the farmers' papayas and mangoes and banana trees. And so they do a lot of damage.
Right.
And they're just everywhere. As we were staying at a Hilton hotel and casino, and they were laying out in the grass in front of the Hilton sign, and they in the back, they had an indoor outdoor type of restaurant, and they had these big concrete pillars, and there's like iguanas hanging out on the concrete pillars above our heads while we're at our table eating our food. You know, it's just like, it was just everywhere. It was insane.
Right, man. That's wild. So what do you typically take those with? You're not shooting them with 50 cal Texans, are you?
Oh, no, no. 22, 25s, 177s, probably 30s is, you know, that kind of thing, 30 cals. Yeah, you don't definitely. I have shot a squirrel one time with a 45 cal.
Tell us about that. Yang.
Well, I was deer hunting, and it was a fox squirrel that was black. It had like a black body and silver and black body and a red fox squirrel tail. And that's kind of like a rare thing to see, and I was deer hunting, and if I had been hunting with like hollow points or something, I'd have probably tore the squirrel up, you know, pretty good, the hide and stuff. But I was just shooting a 200 grain round nose, and this was way back when I first started getting the air guns, and he come running across. I was up in a tree in a stand, and I was like, oh, I've never seen one of those before. And I was like, well, I'm gonna shoot him. So I shot him, and it just went clean. It just made a 45 degree, you know, diameter hole through him. And took him to the taxidermist, you know, patched him right up, and turned out to be a pretty neat little mount. So it's an air gun. You know, people hear you talk about like shooting something with a firearm. They're like, oh, that's overkill. You don't need to shoot something with that big of a gun. Mm-hmm. And they carry that idea over to air guns to where that's not really as true in the air gun world, but just cause you don't have that terminal velocity that you'd have with the firearm, so you're not, you know, not doing so much damage to their hide or their fur when you shoot them with air guns. So
right.
you can go quite a bit larger in caliber with an air gun on an animal that you would never think of doing with a firearm, and still be okay. And you can make a little less, you know, if you're not that good of a, doesn't make that good of a shot, you know, a little 22, 177, you got to be dead on, you know, head shot, whatever, vital shot. Mm-hmm. You can mess up and make a subpar shot with a little bit bigger caliber, like say a 30 cal, and still put the animal down humanely without, you know, a lot of suffering or something. So,
right.
Yeah, it's just, there's some differences between, you know, obviously between firearms and air guns. But I think now that we're getting the power levels up in these air guns, like with the Texan 50 cal, you know, coming out stock 800 foot pounds, the Hotson pile driver, 700, 800 foot pound guns. And then you get the custom guns and getting up into the thousands, like our 50 cal Super Texan doing 1,210 foot pounds. The last couple of deer I've shot with this 1,200 foot pound gun, I've noticed that the deer react differently to the gunshot wound than they would with a Sam Yang with 300 foot pounds of energy. They just, you can tell that it you know, it gives it kind of shocks their nervous system, like a firearm would.
Right.
And complete pass throughs and run off 15, 20 yards and he's down, you know? So,
wow. Yeah, that's incredible. So have you been surprised at how much we've been able to accomplish as far as, energy capabilities, and just, I feel like it's been a short couple of years or few years with how far we've come.
Yeah. When the Texan came out with that, you know, bottle behind the barrel design, that was a big game changer in the air gun world. I mean, as far as big bores, I mean, they had their Condors and their Talons and all that stuff. And they were powerful, you know, small game hunting rifles, pretty much the most powerful ones out there. But just that whole concept of just moving the air from the tube underneath the barrel. I mean, air is just like a race car. Every time you got to go make a turn, it's going to slow down.
Right.
So, you know, the tube underneath, it's got to make two 90-degree turns to come out and go out the barrel and push that slug out to where the Texan design and the Air Force design is. Once that valve strikes, that hammer strikes that valve, it's just a shot right out the barrel. And so there's no slowing down, you know?
Yeah. So do you think that might change some of the designs of even some smaller caliber air guns in the future? Or do you think there's kind of already just like a set typical design for them and that's what we'll stick to?
Well, I mean, it'll probably still be something like that because there ain't too many different ways you can attach air to make it go out the barrel, and being a straight line right behind the barrel is probably the most efficient way, other than just using a bigger valve that moves more volume of air and a bigger air cylinder, or you know, higher pressures. You know, that's the thing. A lot of these guns were 3,000 PSI, and now you're seeing a lot of these, especially the big bores, a lot more big bores are starting to get up to that 4,500 PSI level. And which is always good, but if you don't have an adequate valve to move that type of pressure, it doesn't do you any good.
Right.
You know, so I think, yeah, like I said earlier, like when the firearm industry gets in and they start really, you know, designing stuff, I think we'll see a much more faster advancement in the air gun world when that stuff starts to happen.
Right. So do you personally, do you like build or mod or make any parts that like upgrade the valving systems in these guns, or do you have other people do it? I mean, I know pretty much everyone in the air gun industry collaborates, but.
Right. Yeah, I do. I do most of my stuff with Jeremy in South Africa at African Air Ordnance. Him, the air gun mad scientist. He just keeps on every, like this new upgraded valve for the Texan that he has. It's been like a 5-year project, and every year they've gotten a little bit bigger and a little more powerful. And he just keeps going back and refining it and tweaking the design. And it's just fun to see what he does and the numbers. You know, I get excited, you know, getting these numbers out of these guns with him and seeing what he's capable of doing. I modify some valves, you know, for some customers. But a lot of the stuff that I do is like the valves that he carries for the Sam Yangs and the new, he has a new Evonix and Gamo TC and Rex valves that come out, and they're getting, you know, 700, 800 foot pounds, or they're putting them right up there, putting those guns right up in there in the same power levels as the new Texans and the pile drivers. So these guys that's got these older, you know, subpar Gamo, you know, 300 foot pound guns are now getting, you know, 700 foot pounds of stuff. It's just, it's cool to see because it kind of reinvents the gun, and you can grab that old gun out of the closet that you don't use no more because you've used your Texan for the last 4 or 5 years, and you can get right. It back out up its power. And now it's like having a new gun all over again to play with, you know?
Yeah. I'm sure that's a cool feeling too. Cause especially for people who have been looking into big bores or certain guns and then seeing the price and being like, man, I don't know if I can swing that. And then they, you know, do settle with a different, you know, a subpar power level gun. And then
right.
With all this technology coming out where they can start competing with those higher end big bores and those higher powers, I think is just cool. Just a cool thing.
Yeah. I think that, you know, with the advancements in power and also like compressors. When I first got into this stuff, you know, 7 or 8 years ago, it was ungodly expensive. A shot compressor was $1,500, and everything about the sport was just expensive. You know, your carbon fiber tanks were expensive. You know, to get into the sport, the whole, you know, you'd have 2,000 or 3,000 wrapped up just to get your foot in the door. You know, if you're going to be right. self-sufficient and make your own air and not rely on somebody filling bottles for you and stuff like that. And now that you see, you know, these little portable compressors coming out from like the Hot Spark or the one from Pyramid Air. It just slipped my mind what they're called. But the little portable compressor that they carry and things like that, the compressor prices have just went down, you know, a couple $100 now. You can get a guy a compressor and a gun, and now he doesn't have to worry about running somewhere to get a tank filled when he gets low. And right. You start casting your own bullets instead of buying ammo, you know, get you some molds and things. And I mean, you can eventually you're shooting for pennies on the dollar compared to firearm guys.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's another big selling point for air guns that a lot of people don't think of or understand, especially in the firearms world, is how much cheaper it gets once you are really looking at the numbers and ammunition costs and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and like I was saying about archery earlier, kind of being similar to archery when you air gun hunt, is, you know, the guys that, you know, make their own bows, recurve bows, and then make their own arrows and their own fletchings and things like that. And they kind of come in their own broad, you know, nap their own broadheads if they go old school, you know, mm-hmm. and then take an animal with everything they built themselves. And then it's kind of the same in air gun world. You start modifying and tweaking your own gun. You can get, you know, if you come up with a mold design that or a bullet design that you think might work in your gun, and you have a custom mold made, and now it's your little idea, your little mold design. Now you're making your own bullets. You know, you've modified your gun. You got your own air supply. It's kind of like an archery guy, you know, kind of comes full circle. You're doing everything self-sufficient, you know, melting your own lead. And it's makes for more of a rewarding experience when you take an animal with everything that you've kind of, you know, done yourself.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think anytime you put hard work and energy into something and you get a good outcome, it just feels that much better because you're the one putting all the work in.
Right.
So Chad, tell us about some of the surprising things you've seen with air guns, whether it was, okay, I expected that 20 mil to do a little bit more damage, or I didn't expect it to do that much damage. What are some of the things that you've just kind of been shocked at in the air gun industry?
When I started shooting arrows, I thought that was pretty cool. It was just different, you know, especially a gun that can do both, like your Dragon Claw, and you can buy an air bolt and you can shoot slugs out of it 1 minute and shoot arrows out of it the next. It just makes it more versatile. Those things are pretty cool. And then seeing some of these, you know, 72 cals and the 20 millimeter, it's amazing to see, you know, a big slug like that. I recently went to a machine gun shoot, and a guy had an actual 20 millimeter firearm from like the Cold War, and mm-hmm. it was on like a set of skis because it got dragged around in the mountains in the snow, and they would pull it behind with a military vehicle and would park it, and you laid down to shoot it, and it was like 8 foot long. Wow. And so when I brought air guns to the thing, and I thought maybe I'd get smirked at a little bit, you know, all these firearm guys, they're shooting machine guns, but I brought like a Hotson Blitz, uh-huh. full auto, and I brought that 20 millimeter. And so the guy let me shoot his 20 millimeter. And I was like, well, come over here and shoot this air gun 20 millimeter. And he's like, you got an air gun 20 millimeter? I'm like, yeah, man. I showed him a bullet, and he's like, holy cow. Uh-huh. So he just come over, you know, and he just got the biggest blast out of shooting that 20 millimeter. And I kind of was like, you know, all those guys shoot firearms all their life, and then all of a sudden, none of those guys really knew anything about air guns. It was probably a crowd of like 30 guys, 40 guys at this place. And I ended up having a crowd of like 20 guys standing around us shooting my air guns for a couple hours.
That's awesome.
And, you know, just educating, just like I was saying earlier, just educating people about our industry and our sport. It's a lot of fun to see those guys get excited over an air gun.
Yeah, I've seen it myself too. I mean, not from big boards, but just getting people into it and letting them shoot, you know, some high end stuff, and hearing how quiet it is and seeing how accurate they are, they're blown away. So I think it's going to be hard to get a bad response from people when they shoot air guns.
Yeah,
you have to have a real hater.
It's hard to not get a smile on your face when you shoot one.
Yeah, I mean, shooting anything, even like a little rubber band gun, you shoot a target. Yeah. I mean,
right?
That's pure joy right there. So,
yeah, I agree.
I did see a video. I think it was a video you were with Rossi, and you were shooting like harpoons, basically, and you're getting stingrays. Is that? Am I making that up?
Nope. So I've always loved to bow fish. I've been bow fishing for years, and I have two boats set up to bow fish, a small Bass Tracker for like my local rivers. And I have a bigger pontoon boat that we can take out to the bays. So when I was getting on the arrows, stuff started happening, the air guns, it started making the wheels turn in my head. And I was like, oh man, I bow fish a lot. Why can't I, you know, rig up one of these arrows to with a string and, you know, reel these fish in and shoot them. So that became a project that I started working on. And you can't just use like carbon fiber arrows mm-hmm. to do that, because you're going to miss fish more than you're going to hit them with the refraction of the water. And you don't aim at the fish. You aim mm-hmm. like below, depending on how deep the fish is in the water, you aim lower than the fish. So you're kind of like, you got to kind of like get a feel for it.
Right, right.
And that just comes with experience. So you would just bust up carbon fiber arrows all the time, because you would miss and hit logs or in the water or rocks in the rocky bottom, you know, mm-hmm. the river bottom. And so you would just spend all your time swapping out arrows and retying, you know, the slides with the string on it and stuff. So started with the fiberglass arrow and just did it like an air bolt and machined it to where it had a, you know, a seal on the back and like a little knock area, not a knock area, but like an area in the front to level the arrow, just like the air bolts, and mm-hmm. and just rigged up a bow fishing reel to the side of it. And Rossi came to my first, mine and Reed from Air Guns of Virginia, we had our first lethal air event, that him and his dad come out and shot that ram and that hog and stuff, and it snowed and things, and they did that first episode, and we were sitting around that night, and I was telling Rossi about trying to figure out how to make this bow fishing air gun work, and he's like, well, I'll tell you what, man, you make it work, you give me a call, and I'll come out, and I'll do an episode with you shooting stingrays. Well, that's all I needed to hear. Mm-hmm. You know, like, oh, man, I get to be on American Air Gunner and shoot some stingrays with him on TV. That sounded like a blast. So
yeah,
I went back home. I spent like the next two or three months shooting it and tweaking the design, and which it wasn't really a whole bunch. It was just, you know, just taking a fiberglass arrow and making it shoot out of the dragon claw barrel,
right?
You know, or Sam Yang, just like an air bolt. So that, you know, once I got it working, I hit Rossi up, and he's like, yeah, man, I'll be out there. So he come out and spent a day, and I think we shot a dozen that day. We didn't find any big ones, which normally like Southerns and cow nose, they can get quite large. We end up only finding a bunch of, we only saw like one Southern that whole afternoon that we were, he could only come out and do one day hunt. So mm-hmm. if we could have went out 2 or 3 days, we'd have probably got some pretty big stingrays. But that day, all the only thing we seemed to find was Atlantics, but we shot probably about a dozen of them. And it was a blast. Rossi's a lot of fun to hang out with and hunt with. He's a good guy.
Yeah, I haven't had the privilege of hanging out with him, but I've had him on the podcast and chatted with him a few times on the phone, and he seems like a really good dude. I haven't met a bad guy in the industry. Yeah.
That's exactly what I was getting ready to say. I've met a few, but not very many. For the most part, everybody's like these events I was saying, they got 30, 40 guys and they're there for 4 days and not a one bit of arguing or bickering, and just everybody having a blast, like they've known each other for 20 years. And that might be because they've been talking back and forth to each other on Facebook for the past, you know, 2 or 3 years in these air gun Facebook groups. Mm-hmm. I'm big in these air gun Facebook groups. I think that's something that's good for our sport, because all these guys meet each other from all over the country and all over the world, really. I mean, my lethal air gun hunting group is, it's not a big group. It's like 3,000 couple members, but I got guys from all over the country, Netherlands and South Africa and,
right,
you know, all over. So they're always all these different animals, that, you know, game animals that they're shooting with their, and a lot of them make like homemade air guns and stuff. So it's kind of neat. They share pictures of their little homemade builds, you know, in these third world countries, or, you know, and it's just really interesting to see what some of these guys can come up with when they work with what they got.
Yeah. I've seen a few of those myself, like, I don't know where, but like, I don't know, Indonesia or something. And these guys got these crazy things and
it's you don't know how pretty, safe pretty some wild. Of them are.
Some of them don't look very safe, but
you know, it's interesting to see regardless, and to see some of these animals from different, you know, regions of the world that get harvested by air guns. It's just, it's cool to see. I really enjoy that group and seeing what the guys posting there on a daily basis.
Yeah. It's a funny thing too, just cause I don't know. I feel like maybe we think things are cultural, but then we see examples of like guys in Belize and Mexico and Chile and parts in Europe, like just everywhere. There's like some sort of inclination to get into air guns and make them work and hunt things with them. And it's just cool to see that almost like a universal kind of appreciation for something that is still a pretty small, you know,
right.
industry.
Well, a lot of those, you know, countries, you know, they don't have access to firearms. So
right.
It's illegal for them to possess them. So they have to figure out other ways. And no matter really what region of the world you are, there's always going to be some type of hunter, you know, community. Mm-hmm. And got people that hunt for their own food and, you know, that type of thing. So however they can figure out how to harvest, you know, game animals and put meat on the table for their family, they're going to figure out a way.
Yeah, it's cool to see. It's just like, it's one of those like unifying things that you kind of get to experience with humanity. It's a cool thing to see for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, Chad, where can people find you? And for these hunts, these like group hunts that you're talking about, if someone's listening right now and they want to get into that, how would they go about doing that?
The best thing would be just to like follow the stuff that I do on social media and check my website. I always post, you know, when they're coming up, and the sponsors have been really great. They send, we probably gave away at this last event, gave away like 5 or 6 guns. And Donnie FL has always been a great supporter. He sends like 4 or 5 of his LDCs. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, just all the manufacturers have been, I think maybe just because I'm really the only person really doing that. I get a lot of great support from the industry, as far, and I give away everything for free at the last day of the trip. And it's nothing special. I just put names in a hat or a little bucket or something. And then we just draw names out. Once all the names get drawn out, we put the names back in. And like, you know, JSB Predator, he'll send me like 2 cases of pellets, and everybody, I'll put a can of pellets, and everybody gets a goodie bag and an event t-shirt, with all the sponsors on the back and the event logo on the front. And then, you know, they get a goodie bag, and like I said, a Jet Predator, he might send, you know, 40 cans of pellets. Well, I put a can of pellets in everybody's thing, and then what's left over, I just give away. And, mm-hmm. So they've been real supportive of that, and it just makes it a lot of fun. This last event, man, was pretty crazy. One of the guys that came shot a bison with a .45 Texan, and another fellow came and shot a water buffalo that was there on the property. Mm-hmm. And everybody else, you know, pretty much shot their choice of a ram or a hog. So it was just fun to see everybody, you know, a lot of those guys, and some of those guys, you know, they come from states also that they can't hunt big game with their air guns. And that's
right.
Like I've had guys come from California, Mississippi, Louisiana, I mean, all over the place, Colorado, you know, and so you got guys coming from all over the country to come to this thing, and in their state, they can't, you know, hunt deer or whatever, or they don't have wild hogs where they live, and
right.
They've always wanted to shoot a wild hog. Well, mm-hmm. You know, you can go down to some place and pay a guy to take you out and shoot a hog, or you can come to this event that I'm hosting that's got 40 other air gunners there hanging out for 4 days and having a good time and shoot a hog. Well, just, you know, guys are like, well, that sounds like a lot of fun. And that's what we want. We just want it to be a good experience and good fellowship with fellow air gunners.
Yeah, man. I've been looking at those and been like, man, that would be so fun to come. So how difficult is it to do that? Do you just got to sign up? Do you put down a deposit?
Yeah. Yep, I usually do like a small deposit. Like the West Virginia event this past year was $950, and that was a 3-4 day hunt, your food and lodging included, and your animal. And so you sign up to reserve your spot. I asked for like a $200 deposit. That way, you know, it puts you a little bit into a little skin in the game, because I don't want people like reserving spots and then at the last minute backing out. And then mm-hmm. I have 10 spots with like 1 week to try to fill.
Right.
You know, and like this West Virginia event, it's been 3 years now. We've had a lot of them has came back all 3 years, 2 years and stuff like, so that's cool. Cause you start seeing the same guys, you know, they actually take vacation time and they want to come.
That's awesome.
You know, every year they don't want to miss it. Same with the bear hunt. I got several guys that came last year's bear hunt that's coming to this year's bear hunt. So, and that's in 2 weeks. I'm just super, I can't wait to get up there. And, the guide up there has been sending me past couple of days is just trail cameras of bears and bears and bears. And it's, mm-hmm. The camp wasn't used last year because it had a change of ownership. So no bears was hunting, and it was not hunted in this whole area. So it's like 1 year of it's like if your state, you know, allowed no hunting for a year, and then the next year your population's like almost double because nothing was harvested the year before.
Right. Sounds like a good problem.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I'm hoping, you know, all the guys, you know, if 75% of the guys walk away in camp with a bear in 2 weeks, I'll be super ecstatic.
That's awesome, man. I would love to hunt a bear with an air gun. I'd love to hunt, honestly, any big game with an air gun. And
I'll be heading to Idaho in October for an elk air gun hunt,
man.
Me and my son. So, yeah, anytime, you know, if you want to join us with one of the events, just give me a shout, man. We'll make it work out.
That would be awesome, dude. What is your favorite gun to usually take out? I mean, I know we covered the Texan, but do you do much with the 20 mil?
So I do, I like to go to gun shows and set up at like my local gun shows, and just set up all air guns. And I put that 20 millimeter right out front and center. And then I lay a couple of those slugs out, and like one that I've shot steel with, and the slug is as big around as the palm of my hand.
Yeah.
And I sit it on a table, and guys will walk like halfway past my table, and they'll be like, "What in the heck is that?" And they'll back up, and they'll say, "What is these slugs?" And then I'll stick my thumb in the barrel of the gun and be like, "Check this out. It's 20 millimeter." And they're like, "Holy cow." And it just blows their mind, you know, like, "I can't believe that." And a lot of guys, when they order stuff from me, since I have a mold of the 20 millimeter, I like to send a lot of guys a 20 millimeter slug in the mail just with their order. And then they, you know, there's just like a little extra thing. And they're like, "Holy cow, man, this is so cool. I get to, you know, show it to buddies." And like, can you imagine this comes out of an air gun and things like that. So it's the gun shows are a lot of fun to set up at and introduce a lot of people that's never anything like that, and meet other guys that you didn't know that was around that are into air guns.
Right.
So I've made a lot of air gun friends that way as well. But, I really like the 20 gauge PVA shotgun. That's a lot of fun too. It's just totally different from all the other guns because it's a shotgun.
Right.
The pile drive, I'm really, if it's a big bore, I'm pretty much a fan of it. I really am.
That's awesome. Are there any guns that have disappointed you? Like, ever since you've been in the industry, or did you just mod them and fix them so they didn't?
Well, some of them, like the in the earlier days, the gun came out, you know, especially like when the Texan came out, the bar at like 500 foot pounds. And then another air gun company would release a 45 cal, like the Winchester model, one I was talking about earlier, the 45. And it's like doing 200 foot pounds. And it's just like, well, and it's almost, you know, the same price. And you're like, why would somebody buy a 200 foot pound 45 cal for $800 or $900 when they could spend another $100 and get a 500 foot pound gun, you know? Other than some people don't really like the looks of the Air Force design, you can't beat them for the, you know, lifetime warranties, and you can beat them around, and they're very tough air guns. In the earlier days is disappointing. Now it's kind of like, if you don't come out with something that's got a competitive power level to it to compete with the others, you might as well not even put it out, because you're just wasting your time, I feel, because unless it's, you know, half the price of everything else, I really see a lot of people buying them. And you can just tell by, I mean, what people, and like in the back to like the Facebook groups and stuff, just go in there and look at what guys are talking about shooting every day. If it's not an FX Impact, it's an Air Force Texan, it's a, you know, that kind of thing. So I love to see the advancement of where it's going, and you know, things like the Lehigh defense rounds that me and Chris was playing around with, and doing that 1,000-yard shooting with him in Michigan a couple weeks ago. That was a blast, you know. It's been a wild ride, and it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, man, that's super cool. Who's one of the people that you've been able to meet through this whole thing that was, you kind of were like a fangirl over?
Oh, a fangirl over. I don't know. It was cool to meet Rossi just from watching him on TV a lot. Kip Perot, it was pretty cool meeting him. I met him twice. He's a big air gun hunter that I followed for a long time. You know, going out to Armac, I mean, if you want to meet who's who, you just go out to something like that, Armac. One thing I try to do with my my hunting trips is I always try to have like a guest type of person along to for people to meet, like Rick Ream and Shooter. Rick's been a blast to hang out with. He lives, you know, in the next state above me, and or two states above me in Pennsylvania, but we've hanged out quite a bit, and he's always a lot of fun to hang out with. Mr. Hollow Point, years ago, I went to the Ohio Air Gun Show, and they put us, our tables side by side. So I hanged out the whole air gun show with Mr. Hollow Point. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. That guy seems like a total goofball, man. I love watching his videos.
Yeah. You should get him on your podcast. He's a great guy. Yeah,
man.
Definitely. So, well, yeah, the whole community, man, I like it's only been a very few that maybe not really disliked, but just kind of, you know, not who they seem to be on YouTube videos and things like that.
Right.
But for the most part, everybody's been pretty good people.
Yeah. And I'm sure another variable too, that I always try to consider is like, they're all regular people, you know, and then they grow this, you know, like following, and then people just don't consider like, what is it like to try and talk to 35,000 people who are messaging you every day and asking you questions and just like chatting like you don't have a life and that you can just hang out with them on Instagram and talk to them all day long.
You
get a little bit jaded.
I mean, I even just doing what I do, I get bombarded every day now. It's just, you know, some guys are just lazy and don't want to Google nothing. They just like want to hit you up. They just think because you're on Facebook that they can message you at 3 o'clock in the morning and ask you what pellet shoots best out of this gun. And mm-hmm. I'm like, come on, I got to like turn my phone off at night because it'll just go off. Because it'll be people from other countries or people from California. And it's like, you know, it's 3 o'clock in the morning here, but it's 11 o'clock at night over there.
Right.
And they don't take any consideration. And they just want to message you all night long with you know, questions that they could just go to Google themselves, you know, which I don't mind answering questions, but, you know, things like that and conversating with the guys. But sometimes you got to take a little bit of initiative and figure the little stuff out on your own.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm nowhere near where you're at in the industry. And I still get like, I'm like, oh man, I have like so many unread messages. Like I didn't even realize, or like I didn't even see that this person commented on my post, and I feel kind of bad sometimes
because and then you want to take a break sometimes, like, you know, I just came back from like a week family vacation with mm-hmm. the family, and the wife is like, you know, just this week, just put the phone down, don't get on Facebook, and don't answer messages. And then I didn't do that for like 5-6 days, and I came back home when it was just like people were like, what happened, man? You know, I thought you were mad at me.
Why
didn't you answer my message? And I'm like, come on, man. I was on a week vacation with the family. Just the wife asked me to put the phone down. That's what I did.
Yeah. I even now I still just try, like if I'm not going to be on my phone or something, I'll say like, hey guys, I'm doing a little family vacation, so you're not going to hear too much from me. And
right.
And then I still get messages and stuff like that.
Oh yeah.
I can't imagine what it's like to be like you or Ted Beer or any other of the just bigger names in the industry. Just probably, I don't know.
Well, I don't think I'm a big name, but I do get my fair share of messages. I just enjoy the sport, and I have a lot of fun and making new friends. So I try to get along with everybody and mm-hmm. be friendly with everybody at the same time. So it's a lot of fun. You know, guys send you pictures of, especially like I'll get a lot of people that send me pictures of animals they've taken with their air gun, you know, especially when it's like deer season, I start getting, you know, a lot of messages from guys. Hey, I got this in Tennessee or Florida or Georgia or Texas. And it's just like, oh man, that's cool, man. Thanks for sharing it with me. And then I try to share it on my, you know, my social media stuff. Mm-hmm. Like some of the guys from South Africa send me some pictures. It's, you know, warthogs and, you know, buffalo. It's just, it's a lot of fun to see them share their stuff with you.
Yeah, I think that's one of my favorite parts is when people are open with what they're doing, or they just get excited about their little victory, you know. Because I remember when I shot my first rabbit with open sights on my $200 PCP, you know, I was
right
excited.
Everybody's got to start somewhere. So yeah, definitely.
It's a cool thing.
And then the addiction just keeps growing from there.
Yeah, I went from a $200 gun to a $1,200 gun. And that was before scope and moderator and bipod and all that jazz. So yeah, it's hard to just settle with what you got.
It is. Every time a new big bore comes out, I'm just like, oh man, I gotta get that. Well, I just want, it's like almost like a collection of them.
Right. I haven't gotten a big bore yet. That's my one of, I always say, I'm like, okay, well now my next gun's going to be a big bore. And then I see something like the new Mark III Wildcat come out or some new kind of bullpup or something. And I'm like, I should get that first. I keep putting them on the back burner, but partly because I don't have much to shoot here in my state. Right. Like I couldn't hunt with it here in Colorado. So I'd have to travel to hunt with big bores somewhere else.
Do you have to go like to a range and shoot, or are you in an area where you can shoot like in your backyard and stuff?
Oh, I'd have to go to the range for sure. I'm in a little city backyard. My backyard's probably 15 yards long and maybe 4 yards wide. So my neighbors would be pissed.
Yeah, I live up in the mountains right on the edge of the Virginia, West Virginia line. So sometimes I'm shooting these big boars at nighttime on my range in the backyard. I have 140-yard range in my backyard.
Man.
And sometimes I'll just turn on the ATN and the night vision and just sit out there and shoot some steel and stuff late at night. And out of my closest neighbors, I have a vacation home next door that people only come down a couple times a year, but the rest of my neighbors are like 3-4 acres away all around me. So I don't bother anybody, and I don't run anything with an LDC or a Donnie FL or nothing. I just, I like to hear them go boom. I get enjoyment out of hearing the air guns being loud, unless I have to use it for like a hunting application, like, you know, squirrel hunting or something. And I want to be or hog hunting or something. I want to try to shoot more than one hog, but a deer hunting, I think it's just cool to feel the power that they're capable of producing, is a thrill that I enjoy.
Yeah. That's an interesting point. I usually see or hear other people go in the other direction, or like, you know, if it's so loud, what's the point of even using it? And I've thought that way myself too, but I've never really had a lot of experience with the big boys. So,
well, when you're like hunting, you know, say you're deer hunting, nine times out of 10, you're only going to shoot one time. Mm-hmm. And then if three deer come in and you shoot one, that all three of them run away and the one dies and the other two run away. Mm-hmm. Only instance really in a big game situation is it like hunting hogs over a feeder, where you might be able to shoot one and then wait 20 minutes and, you know, five hogs might come back to the feeder or something. And you want to try to be quiet about it that way. But deer hunting, you know, deer hunting stuff, the stuff that I do in Virginia and stuff, it's pretty much one shot or two shots. And that's the end of your hunting time. You know, you go back home and then you go out the next day for the next hunt or whatnot. So,
Well, that's actually a really interesting point. I never really thought of it that way, because I suppose you are only taking one shot. So should be all you need.
And make it count. That's the key thing, right? Is shot placement. You know your gun, especially if you're going to big game hunt with these guns. Is like I said, back to archery, you need to know, you know, where you're hitting at 50 yards and 70 yards and in 90, whatever area you're hunting, you should know what kind of ranges you can expect to possibly take a shot on a game animal. And you should do enough practice like an archery guy does, and to make sure that you're proficient and all the ranges that you're capable of taking that animal with.
Yeah, you definitely got to know your shot placement, because again, this is a big bore thing, so I don't have too much experience with it, but I know that a lot of times there's that curve once you take that first shot, and if you need a follow-up shot, it's going to be hitting in a different spot typically.
Yeah, it all depends on like your ranges. If you're pretty close, if you're like within 50 yards, and you can get a pretty decent group out of, you know, most of these guns, 4 or 5 shots. Mm-hmm. When you start trying to take 2 and 3 and 4 shots out at like, you know, 80 yards and 100 yards and a pass, then your air pressure really becomes a big factor into where you're aiming. Mm-hmm. And then again, if you're really good with your gun, like an archery guy, then you would know, like, my second shot is going to drop 2 inches. My third shot's going to drop 6 inches from the first one. And then you start using your holdovers. So, like I said, it makes you a better hunter. It makes you a better shot, you know, just overall, you know, getting out there with your gun and finding out the capabilities of it.
Amen to that, man. You got to get out there. Well, Chad.
Yes, sir. It's no fun sitting inside, huh?
No, you got to get out there. Or if you don't,
that's right,
don't have a basement, you might have to dress up warm in the winter. That's one of the things I've found here is I can't, at least in my home, because I don't have a basement. If it's cold outside, I still got to go outside to shoot. So I can't
Take
away in the basement.
Yeah, I don't shoot in the basement either. All my stuff's outside around the house.
No, that's good. If you got a 140 yard range, my wife might not be too happy with you.
Yeah, I cut a lot of trees down to make that 140 yard range happen.
Well, it's worth it. The things we do for air guns.
That's right, man. That's right.
Well, cool, Chad. Thank you so much for coming on to the podcast, man. Was there anything else that you wanted to let people know? Any new things coming or places where they can follow along on social media or anything like that?
Yeah, sure. If you're interested in going on a group air gun hunt, just check out my website here from time to time, lethalair.net. Other ways you can find out is just following us on social media, Lethal Air Air Gun Hunters on YouTube, and the same as Facebook, and just Lethal Air on Instagram.